This week's episode of the Worn and Wound podcast is brought to you by Timeless Luxury Watches and their new collaboration with Nomos and the National Breast Cancer Foundation. In partnership, they have created two custom Nomos Club campus models to support the work of the foundation, providing help and inspiring hope to those affected by breast cancer. Stay tuned to later in the episode to learn more.
Hey everyone, this is Ilya, and joining me on the podcast once again is Blake.
Hello.
And Zach.
How's it going?
And today is our last day of Baselworld coverage from Switzerland.
Woo!
I'm so relieved. I mean, we're here for one day less, but like, I feel so exhausted. It must be because we, I guess, like cram more meetings, but I don't know. Maybe it was just the fact that they were back to back.
It was a boring show.
Yeah. Well, there's that
tired
too.
A bit.
Yeah.
I feel like there were sort of limited moments where we got really excited about things.
Yeah.
And when you get excited about things, like the meetings like fly by and you're like pumped and there's like a certain amount of energy about putting it up on Instagram and stuff. But when there's nothing to get excited about, it's like, okay, that was just a long meeting.
Yeah.
You're just like hiking down the halls and shoes that aren't quite comfortable enough with bags that are too heavy.
Yep.
Yeah. It gets exhausting. Although I'd say today we probably saw more interesting stuff than any other day.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too. Mm-hmm. All right, let's just jump right in. So one of the first brands that we saw today was Laco, and you guys actually went to that. I went to the press room. What did you see at Laco that was interesting?
We didn't see a lot because I think they don't have a ton of new stuff coming out this year. They had like a limited edition watch that I don't even think is like necessarily out yet. So I don't know if we're supposed to talk about it. But it wasn't like a mind-blowing thing. It was like iterative. But I guess the big thing was they did a GMT with like dual crown, so one for changing the time, one for rotating an internal bezel. I don't remember the name of the watch.
I don't know if we heard it, to be honest.
Yeah. So we did a good job at that meeting.
Modern Pilot GMT by Leica.
Yeah, it was cool because it's got a titanium blast on the outside, so it looks like steel, sort of matte titanium, but it's steel.
It's a very dark matte steel,
and it's got either a black or a light gray dial with sort of day night internal bezel, so like a gray or a black on either side.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool looking. I mean, I think it's the kind of a design that people are going to find appealing.
It was different. Yeah. And the crowns were cool. It had like very flat diamond crowns that kind of perfectly fit in these little crown guards. So you didn't get like, they didn't bite into your skin when you're wearing it. And they were still very easy to manipulate because like they came up to like a point. And I don't know the diameter, but it wasn't small. It was probably 43 maybe. Mm-hmm. But it had very short lug to lug, like very short lug to lug. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like it wore well. It was an interesting watch. It was different.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the kind of thing that, like I said, I think people are going to find it appealing. It's fun. Like, I wouldn't say it's terribly serious or like really authentically tool watchy or anything like that. It's just, it's nice colors. It's a fun watch. I think people are going to like it.
So after Laco, we went to Nomos.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that this was necessarily like a purely iterative year for Nomos because they technically do have some new models. They've really sort of doubled down on turning some of their iconic watches into sports watches, even more so by upping the water resistance in a couple of them, right? To, what is it, 1,000 feet?
1,000 feet. Yeah.
What did you guys think?
I think that they're like in the face of what I liked about Nomos watches. And if I want a 300 meter sport watch, I'm just not going to go to Nomos for it. I'm going to go there them for a design focus, elegant, everyday dress, casual office watch in the 36 to 39 millimeter range.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want those watches to just be pumped up, inflated, which is kind of what these were. They were like bigger versions. And I just didn't like them on my wrist straight up. There are some nice things about them. Like the hands were bigger and bolder. They use some cool colors. There's a cool bracelet. The bracelet was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But on my wrist, particularly the Tangente models, like, you know, those kind of like Bauhaus lugs, those flat lugs, the same thing that's on the Antea, like those things are kind of dangerous when they're pointing out from your wrist. And that watch felt jagged.
Mm.
You know, like it's not something I would find comfortable to wear, but I don't have the wrist for it.
So what about this? Let's say that watch had the same specs, the same aesthetic, but it was scaled down to, let's say, like 37 millimeters. Would it be more interesting to you then?
Maybe, but I wouldn't like, I just don't think I need a 300 meter version of that watch, you know, 50 to 100 meters, which, you know, I could splash it with water. Not, you know, it just doesn't quite click to me,
right?
To be honest. I just, considering everything they could be doing and can be doing, and that there's, you know, they could be inventing new models or working more on lines that have kind of fallen to the wayside, like the Neomatic, or I just don't see why this.
That's fair.
I mean, I agree with you in the sense that, like, I don't think any of those watches are particularly for me. Like, I don't want any of them. I think maybe one thing we lose sight of sometimes is, like, all the watches you just described wanting still exist. They're just in the catalog.
It's true.
You know what
it's
I mean? True. Like, it's not like they're eliminating things. They're just creating these larger things. And I think it seems like the last couple of years, Nomos has maybe just gone a bit in the direction of, like, bigger and more expensive with the new releases. So it's kind of like, oh, they're losing sight, or, you know, it feels like, oh, they're forgetting about, but they still exist. Like, you can still go get an awesome 36 millimeter watch from them, you know?
And I just kind of wonder if this is, like, some appeal to a more general luxury American market or like that. I mean, the fact that they say 1,000 feet on it, I also thought was interesting versus 300 meters. And I mean, 1,000 is like a better number, but feet is really only used in the States. So I think that's kind of interesting.
I mean, I think also, like, I have a slightly larger wrist, and I don't think the, so they did specifically, you know, one of the newest things they did were three scaled up versions of existing watches in the sport line. So they did a club and then two Ahoys, and they were larger, but also, like you were saying, beefier. So the cases were beefier. They were more steel, I think they were saying, in that case, aside from being proportionally larger. And the hands were beefier and stuff. And on my larger wrist, like, it looked fine. Like, it looked nice. I again, I don't personally, I would not personally get that one. But, like, if you want a larger watch, like, I think it looked nice. It's in this kind of dark, in this black dye. Like, it looked like a nice watch. It was well done, and it's Nomos or whatever.
But I guess it's also kind of weird in terms of brand positioning, because, like, so they used to have sport versions of the club watch, and they got rid of those a while ago. I don't really know what the stats were, but it was, like, a beefier version, but it was small. And the Tangente 2, which had more lume on it. And then they did the Ahoy, and the Ahoy was their, like, water watch. And they had that for a few years. Then they went their Neomatic, blah, 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 blah. And then last year they came out with these, like, amped up watches, like the Aqua, the Club Aqua, which I think were 200 meters. And I think they upgraded the Ahoy and blah, blah, blah. Now another upgrade to 300 meters. It's like, what's the, why water? Why is that the grail of that brand? I just don't know.
I mean, maybe that's feedback from retailers. Like, maybe people are coming in and being like,
dive watches,
this doesn't look like a watch that can go in the pool. It can, but it doesn't look like it can, so I want a watch that looks like it can go in the pool.
42 millimeters of the club. Like, what if they did a bezeled club? Then we're talking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, but it's kind of interesting. During that meeting, she also, you know, we asked, like, what are some of the best-selling models? And one of the ones that she said was doing really well was the Autobahn watch, right?
Tangente update in the Autobahn to the best of last year.
Yeah. And last year, obviously, I think the sort of reception for the Autobahn watch was a bit lukewarm. So it just goes to show, like, whatever, like, the critics might think, it's like, at the end of the day, the people are buying. So they must know something about what their customers want.
Totally.
But yeah, those... Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, but as critics and abstractly, like, looking at the brand, it's just like, it's a... It seems like a veering of paths. You know?
The bracelets were super cool. So in the larger watches we just described, there is a new, I mean, there are two new bracelets this year. They never had bracelets before. On the larger watches was kind of a linked bracelet, like many thin links. And then on a couple smaller watches, they had what they described as like a Milanese wrapped in wire and then pressed. So it doesn't look like a Milanese, but it's kind of got that feel. Both were super nice, looked nothing like other things, were very comfortable. So, like, that's super exciting, especially if that's something they eventually sell separately, which they're not currently. I could see a lot of Nomos customers going out and buying those, for sure.
And it kind of makes sense for them to make bracelets like that. I wouldn't want necessarily a Nomos watch with, like, fitted end links, because I don't really think they have any models where that would really work or look right, you know?
It'd be weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a nice bracelet that looks really nice on those watches.
Yeah, the opposite of them going bigger and sort of like pricier. There was a collection of watches that actually had like one watch style from like four of their most iconic lines in a smaller case with an alpha movement at a really like accessible price point. Probably the most accessible they've ever done, or not ever done, but at least in the recent years.
Yeah,
what was the name of that collection?
It's the Duo.
Duo.
Two hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a Tangente. Orion, a Tetra, and I always forget the fourth.
Ludwig?
Ludwig, yeah.
That's one with the Roman numerals.
Ludwig. All at 33. I mean, the Tetra, the equivalent of 33 millimeters in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
These nice kind of like champagne dials, kind of like taupey champagne.
Yeah.
Really, really nice. And I think they generally range from just barely north of $1,000 to like just barely north of $1,200.
That's killer.
Yeah. they were very nice. And like, you know, I think nice to see an affordable Nomos in the group and like a no-brainer for anyone who wants a ladies watch that's not plastered with diamonds and all kinds of other things brands do.
Yeah. I do wonder, I was just going to say, I do wonder how somebody might feel had they bought like an alpha powered watch from like a few years back that was like $1,800 or something like that, to see Nomos putting out one for like $1,100 or $1,200.
Well, it doesn't have seconds hands. So these are the first watches without seconds hands.
I know, but like, you know, as a consumer, I wouldn't be like, oh, I paid an extra $600, $700 for a sub-seconds, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But in Nomos land, I mean, you pay an extra several hundred dollars for a date and stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm. But those were cool. I mean, we don't talk about ladies' watches very much on the website, but when we do, we always look for watches like that that aren't so obviously a woman's watch. Or if you're just like somebody with smaller wrists who wants a smaller watch.
They're very appealing. I mean, like if they were a couple millimeters larger, they would have, they're not like feminine color, you know, like it's not like a soft pink.
Very neutral.
Like it's very neutral. Very neutral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next up after Nomos, we met with Bulova. And I think we can all agree that was probably one of the best meetings that we had today.
Yeah, for sure. If not one of the best meetings of the whole show.
Yeah. So Bulova's been known to tap into their archives. They've been doing it for the last couple of years. But this year, I feel like they really doubled down on that. So the first thing was the Computron, which I know you guys really liked.
Coolest thing at the show. Like, cool factor wise.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely up there, especially considering it was like, it's a pretty novel design, but it's not $1,500. You know, it's $300 or $350, something like that. So it's like, I don't know, it gets away with the quirkiness of it because it's just like a fun affordable watch. And yeah, I mean, it is unexpected though to me, just because they've done some watches like, I mean, they did the Devil Diver. I forgot what the name of that, like that big chronograph one, the kind of like colorful one.
Stars and Stripes.
Yeah. But this is digital. Which, like, they're not a digital company, so that is kind of weird, you know. And then the design, if you're not familiar with it, it's kind of like one of those driving watch designs, but from the like 70s, 80s, where the dial is like up at an angle.
Yeah.
So like if you have your wrist, like you don't have your wrist turned like you're looking at a normal watch dial, you have it at the side, then it's pointing at you. Super cool, weird.
We all likened it to Cylons, which was a great little moment because we were all just geeking out a little bit.
I said Knight Rider, technically.
I prefer Cylons.
Okay, nerds, whatever. I shouldn't say that because one of the people from Bulova was like,
yeah,
Cylons. And I have no clue what you're talking about.
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And they came in, there was three versions. There was like an all gold one, which is really, that's the remake, really. That's what it was. And it's really kind of ostentatious with the red LED, but it's, somehow it works. A silver one with blue, which is cool. And then a black one with a rubber strap. It's the only one with the rubber strap. The other two have bracelets. And like, the black one just like immediately.
That was the sickest one.
Immediately kind of clicked.
That's the one to get for sure. I mean, you can get whatever, but that one was very cool.
And then after that, there was the Joseph Bulova collection. And that was just sort of like a series of vintage inspired sort of art deco-y watches. If you've ever looked at like vintage Bulova watches from like the 20s and 30s, these are basically modeled after those. They were killer, right? Like they were beautifully done, Swiss made with Swiss movements, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Lido movements.
Excellent finishing. The dials were absolutely stunning. I think we were all smitten with the dial work on these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super cool. And they came in four shapes or like, four shapes / sizes. So one sort of rectangular watch, one rectangular watch with kind of bowed size, so a little bit rounder, and then two circular models, one a little bit larger than the other,
mm-hmm.
and in a range of colors from black to white to like sort of, you called some salmon-y, mm-hmm. it's like salmon creamy color. And like especially with the square ones, like you get the sense that maybe they were a little bit bigger than, you know,
the original
ones.
but not grossly upsized,
I feel like every year brands talk about, we modernized it the way you want to modernize it. And that's never true. They modernized it the way you want them to. Like it's an appropriate size.
I think my favorite one was the black dial with the sort of salmon print. And that was one of the rectangular ones. That one was stunning.
Yeah. No, and those were all really reasonably priced. I think they were all
Around 1,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, reasonably relative, but
they're limited editions too. I think there was 350 or 375 of each. So that adds up to a lot because there were a lot of different SKUs.
Yeah. But
it's not like a massive open edition. But like, you know, small for, I think, Bulova standards.
Yeah. But I feel like to a lot of people, they're going to see that and it's going to get them like super excited. Like if that's their style and they wanted a watch like that, maybe a modern version they could wear all the time. Like you're going to get really jazzed.
Yeah. I'm excited to see them tap into the other side of their archives, not necessarily just like the sportier stuff, but the kind of cool, older, dressier stuff as well.
Then there was like a line extension to the Oceanographer.
Right.
AKA Devil Divers. The modern version, not the vintage, like, Swiss-made one, but the one with the Miyota movement. And I think the new colors were way nicer than the original.
Totally.
There's, like, a green one, which is a bright, bright green, but it's got a little blue in it, so it's, like, touching on a kind of an aqua. Mm-hmm. And I actually forget the contrast color there. But then the other two, one was blue with yellow contrast, and the other one was...
blue and orange.
Blue and orange.
Yeah.
They were both great looking. And what they did was they took the contrast color, which is like first 15 minutes on the bezel. The green one might have been just green and black or something. But they took the contrast color as the first 15 minutes on the bezel, but then also used it for an outline on the dial, plus the crosshairs on the dial.
Yeah.
It was really, they were really nice. These are really, really well-tuned watches and they felt good. And they're like 700, I think, something like that. Really nice. Really
yeah.
Nice.
I mean, if you like the Devil Diver, you're going to just... Yeah. Find a bunch of them in different colors that are all very appealing.
And now a word from our sponsor. The National Breast Cancer Foundation NOMOS Club Campus is a collaboration between the Foundation, NOMOS Glass Suta, and Timeless Luxury Watches. Two versions are available, in 36mm and 38.5mm, with a portion of each sale going to fund the National Breast Cancer Foundation. The smaller model features a white silver-plated dial, a pink seconds hand, and peak outlines for each numeral. The larger model features a dark blue dial, a pink seconds hand, and light blue minute markers. Each is powered by an alpha hand-wound movement, upgraded with the NOMOS swing system. Both feature steel case backs with an engraving of the National Breast Cancer Foundation logo, a symbol of life, growth, and hope for the future. As with other club campus models, custom engraving is available on the back of each watch. The price for the National Breast Cancer Foundation models is $1,500 for the 36mm model and $1,650 for the 38.5mm model, which is the same as the original NOMOS club campuses. Unlike previous Timeless collaborations with NOMOS, the National Breast Cancer Foundation NOMOS Club Campus is not a limited edition, but rather a regular production model which is intended to create a continuous contribution to the National Breast Cancer Foundation. To learn more or to purchase one of these special pieces, head to timelessluxwatches.com. That's timelessluxwatches.com.
So we also took a meeting with Bell & Ross today, and I think both you and I were impressed with them last year and like equally impressed this year. I mean, like the thing with Bell & Ross, they kind of get a bit of flack. I guess they're a little bit high for Etta-based watches, but I don't know. They're like really beautifully done. They brought the sizes down and, you know, the watches are, I think, a little bit more versatile for a number of different wrist sizes. And like the collection just used a great array of colors. There was that one, the BR, I forget the reference, but it kind of looks like a 556i.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah. Blue steel for this year.
Yeah, I think we saw the black dial version last year, and like that's a beautiful watch. Like that's the 556i sort of refined. But there was some other stuff too. There was a chronograph that I know you were really into.
Yeah, it's a black and bronze chronograph from their vintage series.
Yeah.
So it's a, you know, 3 and 9 register chronograph with a fixed tachometer bezel, and it's playing off that black and gold two tone thing, but instead of being gold, it's bronze. Stabilized bronze though, so I don't think it's going to get really funky so much. It's just kind of darken more evenly.
That's what she said, the rep from Bell & Ross.
Yeah, I don't know what stabilized, what that process is, but it was gorgeous. It was really rich looking, and like particularly these gold sub dials really jumped out. Like it's the kind of watch, like, I don't know if you told me it was solid gold and the dial was onyx and gold, like, and it was just like a $25,000 one-off piece. Like, and visually, you would have been like, oh, yeah, it was still expensive. It was around $5,000, but, you know, it was made out of this more rugged materials and it just worked.
Yeah.
Same kind of cool sleazy thing as the Chrono Tudor one, you know.
But I think it was better than the Tudor Chrono. Mm-hmm. It looked so much more elegant.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's a more tame size and like a little bit more of a finessed dial design.
And case design too. It's not a big slap
side.
It's not
chunky. It's not chunky.
Yeah. I was looking when we got when that watch came out, I was examining the pushers and the crown. Because I remember from the Tudor one, and we commented on this in the last podcast, that it was just a bit too much that everything was gold. It was like overwhelmingly gold, all of the pusher and the crown and stuff. And we kind of, whatever. And this was all bronze as well. And when, you know, in its sort of like fresh state, like unoxidized state, it's got like the look of like a soft gold, but it was much more palatable for some reason. I think the pushers and the crown were a little bit.
So it's actually more warm. Maybe it's like the lack of contrast made things stand out less. There's some other ones too. I quite, you know, I've always had like a weird reaction, I don't know, to their square watches. And I think honestly, the thing about it comes from a little bit of like in the days before really getting into all this, like, you know, the hot brands that were kind of like on too many wrists in New York City were like Panerai, Bell and Ross. And it kind of seemed like they just got too trendy and too popular and, you know, blah, 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 you know. And now I think they've cooled a little bit. But they're still clearly a high, extremely popular brand globally.
Yeah.
I feel like their designs have gotten a little bit more nuanced, perhaps, in that range, that square range. They feel like less ostentatious. And the watch itself, frankly, after seeing watches year after year after year, have maintained, like, they're the square watch brand, right? Mm-hmm. Now you see them and you're like, well, they own it, right? Mm-hmm. And the ones that we saw this year were cool. Like, that green, there's a matte green, matte olive green ceramic with orange.
It was the accent. Based on the MA1
jackets. Yeah, the MA1 jackets, which are those iconic green jackets with the orange interior. Mm-hmm. It was just really cool. It was really cool. I like green watches. It's something you don't see very often, and they got it right with the all green case there.
Yeah, another good year for them. It wasn't like they didn't have a bunch of different SKUs, but like what they showed was pretty nice.
We were also surprised by a strap we saw there.
Oh, yeah. They like totally tapped into the watch nerd strap thing.
Well, Billy and Zach just stared at me for a minute and I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah, they had an Erica's Originals on one of their watches. We had a Bell and Ross branding on the buckle, but it was other than that, it was like purely hers and they were stating that it was hers. It's not like a, you know, private label thing. And it's great. It's just like very cool. Yeah, they seemed excited that we knew about the strap and about that company and I think, I think like the people who love those straps will be excited to see them on the watch.
Yeah, it was cool. So then we split up and I met with Zenith. So Zenith had a, you know, not necessarily a quiet year, but they really didn't have too many novelties, but what they showed was pretty cool. So one of their big things this year was the Zenith Defy Inventor, which is a follow-up to last year's Zenith Defy Lab, which is that crazy oscillator that they did that, in my opinion, is probably like one of the more like interesting things that's come out of the watch industry in the last, I don't know, decade or something like that. So that original watch was definitely like a prototype that they weren't serializing. It was just sort of like an introduction to the technology. And this time around, they finally put it into like a serialized production watch. They're not going to be making a ton of them, but they are making watches that they're selling. Like actively selling. So they put this like awesome oscillator into sort of the same, it has a very similar aesthetic, like the dial kind of looks the same, but the case is much more toned down this time around. So the material that was originally on the case of the first version is now only on the bezel of this version. Yeah. What they're trying to do is really show off this oscillator. So that's where you're going to see it from the front. So they have this sort of like intense skeletonized dial, but eventually I'd love to see them do something a little bit more classic.
Yeah. I feel like we hear that from other brands where there's something interesting going on in the movement and they want to show it to you. So they open it up on the dial.
Yeah.
But is that really necessary? Like if you're really jonesed, if you're first of all in the market to buy a movement like that, you know what it is. And like, I don't know. Yeah. It seems like unnecessary.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm obviously not the customer for it. I'm not that guy who likes that aesthetic. And I'm sure there are plenty of people who are. Otherwise, they wouldn't be making these watches. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you.
It is a little weird, though, to just take like this crazy limited edition they did and just sort of modify it for the next edition and, you know, use that like carbonated aluminum or whatever it was for the bezel rather than go like that was the crazy limited edition where we skeletonized everything. And now like, you know, what's in it. It's in the case back. Here it is working. And it's ready for consumption.
Because there are also a lot of benefits to it aside from it just being cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, it's very efficient. It's like it has, you know,
more structurally sound in many ways because it's obviously like one piece versus like dozens.
Super high, like a high beat rate. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what it was. There were a lot of cool things with that movement. Yeah. It's also weird looking though, as I recall, like it has like an insect like quality when it's in motion. Like maybe you don't want to see that, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like you want to know you have the most high tech thing, but you don't need to see it. It's like Patek Philippe doesn't show their tourbillons from the front of their dial.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have like reasons for it. I don't know. You know, I don't specifically know. It might have to do with like light and just like protecting it and stuff like that. They care about that kind of thing. You know. If they can do it. So can Zenith.
Yeah. And then the other thing that was cool from Zenith was that they had three El Primeros celebrating the 50th anniversary of the El Primero. And basically these are one-for-one recreations of the original El Primero chronograph, save for the fact that this one has an open case back so you can actually see the movement, and the cases are rendered in white gold, yellow gold, and rose gold. And all of those are limited editions of just 50 units each. From my understanding, they're all already sold out. Like they've been allocated, and I mean they're really cool. If you love the El Primero and you want one in a precious case, this was definitely the watch for you. But yeah, I mean, not that much to say there.
Cool.
So one of the last meetings of the day was a first for us, and you guys took this meeting. So where did you go?
We went to Rolex. We met with the Crown. Yeah, we got a meeting with Rolex, and minds weren't blown. We got to see some Rolexes that I'm sure you've already seen all over every website. And it was nice to see them in person because, like, I mean, the thing with a lot of these Rolex, particularly some of the crazy ones we handled that are, like, totally and utterly not my taste. And I even put one up on Instagram and, like, it's, I think, the first time a Rolex has gotten like no response on Instagram. Like, but you know, there's no way to handle this stuff in person unless you're partying with, like, I don't know, crazy rock stars and you know, sultans and stuff like that. Like, these are insane watches. But
I mean, it's also interesting to go into a meeting where you see like fully diamond encrusted watches with rainbow jewel insets for the hour markers, and then all gold Daytona with animal print dial and a diamond dial and all these things and whatever. And it's like, as much as it may or may not be to your taste, one, it is absolutely beautifully executed to the like highest possible standards, and they are all going to be sold, so it doesn't matter what you think. So like,
totally,
you know, no one else can, or a few others can say that
you're holding smoke, you know. It's like these things, it's so beyond you, and like they don't really present it in the like a what do you think kind of a way. It's just like, and here it is. And this is now this one, you know. And it's like,
well, in all fairness, like,
I mean, they did a very
the people we met with were lovely, and like, they didn't take that tone, but it was very much this is what we have. It's not like you know, sometimes when you take meetings, there's a sort of a tone in the room where like, we know this one's not as good as that one, and this is going to be the one everybody likes. This one's just like, and here's another winner, and here's another winner, and here's the real winner, and here's another winner, and that's how it goes.
And this ones are improved, and now this one's better than it's ever been, and it's the best it has ever been, and that's all you need to know. Goodbye.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's kind of awesome. Like, that swagger's kind of cool.
You're
like,
confident.
Yeah.
Rolex does not doubt themselves. That is for sure.
Yeah, because we've been to meetings where it's like, we have like PR people being like, please tell us what you think. So we're like, oh god.
They're like, we don't know what to do with this one. But like you're saying, this one's just like, the person who wants to buy this knows this exists, and they're gonna buy it, and that's
not totally
yeah.
It was very cool. I mean, I like hearing the opinions, like walking around Basel talking to like people who know a lot about Rolex, because we obviously don't talk about them. You guys know more about them than I do, but just you were care, I guess I should say, talking to people who care a lot about Rolex and follow the releases of things. And I don't know, it's interesting to hear their opinions about why it was great or why it was terrible. And I guess the general consensus about Rolex releases this year is that it was a bit off and nothing really cool happened. They looked real nice to me. The Batman on a Jubilee looks nice to me. I'm sure they'll sell a bunch of them, you know.
And it was improved, apparently. It's a newer movement. Slimmer. Yeah, they have different method of finishing it perfectly, so it has like a slightly different lines. And there's a Jubilee. If I were to get nitty gritty, because we actually, you know, my friend Rob Velasquez was there with us, and he was in this meeting. It was a group meeting, and he has the Batman from the previous generation, which just ended. That had an Oyster, and I think the Oyster bracelet, being it's a little wider, it has a little bit more of a kind of aggressive stance to it than the Jubilee, which is a little more delicate. And I think I like it more on the Oyster. There, I've done it. I've said it.
You criticize them.
I know. But I mean, they're both gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's kind of moot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I heard some people also complaining about the Yachtmaster they released.
It's 42. They have increased the size.
Yeah. And it's platinum with white gold.
Yeah.
With sort of matte black bezel and matte black dial. And there's not... You know, someone was saying, oh, there's no red on the dial. Like, it doesn't say Yachtmaster in red or anything like that. And looked nice to me. I actually thought it looked really kind of nice badass. Looking. Like, yeah. I was like, that's a tough watch. Like, for a watch made of, like, white gold's considered precious metal. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For a watch made of precious metal, it's, like, it's kind of black. It's, like, very black and kind of cool.
The bezel's really cool.
Came on an Oyster Flex. It was very cool. Yeah. And I had never really played with an Oyster Flex before. And hearing them explain it, you know, they were very clear to say... it's an Oyster Flex bracelet, not a rubber strap, because inside the strap is actually metal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a metal bracelet, and there's some buffers on the inside. It's a very sophisticated rubber bracelet, and that was really cool to sort of hear the words from their mouths explaining it. And I thought that watch was like super cool looking.
Yeah, I do too. I think the other thing people don't like about it is just that they know it's like going to be completely unobtainable, which a lot of Rolexes, they have crazy wait lists and like a precious metal one. But yeah, coming into it with absolutely no attachment to the Yachtmaster line, frankly, I just don't care about them. Like, it just was a cool looking variation on that kind of sub-esque thing. And, you know, comparing sort of my mind to a Pelagos, which is a little bit bigger, which, is, you know, you wear, so you have one, like, it didn't look big at all. It just looked like a normal size kind of modern luxury sport watch with, this like gnarly bezel. Like, it's matte black with raised gloss black and ceramic, and it has a really cool effect.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, like, going the show, you know, generally speaking, we'll get into this in our like wrap up, and we've said it a bunch, but it was a slow year.
Yeah.
And I think that I kind of look at like what Rolex did, and I guess if you're a Rolex person, you have your peculiarities or your like specific critiques, but like, it wasn't that bad. You got some cool stuff. If you're in the market for a cool new Rolex, like, you got some choices. If you have an AD who can get you one, like, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
But if you have like 500 to 1,000 burning in your pocket right now, and you like want to go pick up the latest and greatest from Basel, like, there are some options, but not a ton, you know.
That said, I'd say like the more affordable brands, the brands that are perhaps a little bit less like, I don't know, bound to the ebbs and flows of the greater Swiss luxury market, seem to have more fun this year, whereas everyone else was iterative and safe, you know,
with the exception of Tudor, I suppose.
Right, I guess they weren't safe.
But they iterated on a lot of other ones.
They were sort of iterative, like
the rest easier of them was one. Being,
But they still did it. I mean, we joke, it's Tudor World. It was still Tudor World.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone talked about it. When you thought you were done talking about it, you still ended up talking about it. We're talking about it right now. God damn it. You know, it's like you can't get away from it.
Yeah. I mean, so that was pretty much Basel World. You know, we took a couple of other meetings, met with some of like, you know, people that we knew. We met with the guys from Formex really briefly to just sort of talk about what they were up to. We talked to Chase Fancher from Oak and Oscar. He showed us some things.
Yeah, I got to see the Humboldt that's been being sold. And that watch is really nice. Like, he did a good job with it. Yeah. He knows how to make a nice watch. And, you know, he's really proud of the work they did on the bezel and the action on the bezel of that watch. And it's like well worth the effort. Like, they achieved quite a bit there. The bracelet's super nice. Like, it's a really nice watch. They did another good job. And then with the Formex people, you know, they just, you know, they're kind of doing a lot of things behind the scenes to improve the hardware of their bracelets and various things like that. And they have some really cool stuff they're working on. I don't know that any of it's really ready for showtime quite yet, but I mean, it's all great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're doing a lot of cool stuff. They, again, are sort of pushing things forward with hardware. So that was really cool.
Yeah. So we are going to have one more episode, probably in like a week and a half or so. That's going to be our debrief for Basel World.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So everyone, thanks for tuning in. And until next time.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Worn & Wound Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Looking for a new watch? A strap? Don't forget to visit the Wind Up Watch Shop. And of course, head to wornandwound.com daily for news and reviews of great wristwatches. Music tracks Nowhere Land and Inspired are by Kevin MacLeod and are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0.